When I hum songs, they're all dumb songs. Without reason or rhyme. But I'm certainly in my prime. I mean, I'm happy as a bird flying up above. Want a little love and get a little love, and I'm having myself a time.
Billie Holiday opening up this afternoon's Fresh Air with Having Myself a Time. Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff has called Alan Dershowitz one of the nation's three or four most consistent defenders of everybody's free speech. Dershowitz is a civil liberties lawyer who has defended many controversial people. He's currently serving as counsel to Jack Henry Abbott. He's represented a Jewish Defense League bomber, Harry Reams, the co-star of the X-rated film Deep Throat, CIA whistleblower Frank Snepp, and defense attorney F. Lee Bailey. Dershowitz also represented a criminal attorney for his involvement in a police corruption investigation, which was later dramatized in the film Prince of the City. Dershowitz is a professor at the Harvard Law School and the author of the book The Best Defense. We'll hear from him at 4 o'clock. Thursdays at 3:45, we're featuring a series called Poets of Pennsylvania. Today on the series, poet Sonia Sanchez discusses her work with interviewer Dan Lusk. With me now is painter Alice Neal, whose work is currently on exhibit at the Philadelphia College of Art in a group show of women whose work is represented in the archives of the Women's Inner Art Center of New York City. Alice Neal was born in 1900, and she grew up in Colwyn, Pennsylvania, and studied art at the Philadelphia School for Design, which later became the Moore College of Art. Throughout the decades, Neal has painted portraits of artists, poets, friends, and family, as well as landscapes and still lifes. She was a woman painting portraits at a time when neither women nor portraits were highly regarded in the art world. Recognition didn't start to come until the 1960s. In 1974, she had a solo show at the Whitney. She also, by the way, painted with the WPA during that project. Her portraits communicate the personality and characteristic expressions of her subjects. Since the 1930s, many of her subjects have posed in the nude. Neal did a nude self-portrait at age 80, and that painting is one of the ones on exhibit now at the Philadelphia College of Art. Alice Neal, welcome to Fresh Air. It's a pleasure to have you here.
All right. How do you do?
You grew up in a very small town, Colwyn, Pennsylvania.
Yes. I was born in the main line at Marion Square, Pennsylvania. But then when I was small, about 3 months old, they moved to a little place called Colwyn, PA. It was right near Darby, and it was near Chester.
I don't imagine there were many museums or galleries.
There was no art there whatsoever. In fact, we lived on a beautiful street. It had been a pear orchard. And all the blossoms would come out. It was lovely, but there was no one to paint it. And all kinds of things happened there, but there was no one to write it.
So how were you introduced to the world of art?
I don't know. I just always wanted to be an artist. I would get a paint book for Christmas, you know, and paints, and I loved that. I don't know. I had no role model, really. I just always knew what I wanted to do.
Since you had no role model, did art seemed like something that you wouldn't be able to do since there was no evidence that a woman from your town could do it?
No, I didn't admit that there was anything I wouldn't be able to do.
What about your family and your neighbors? Did they consider art an acceptable
profession? No, I tell you what, after all, the philosophy of this country then was pragmatism. That means, you know, a thing is good if it works. It's a very ordinary philosophy. And also there was terrible Puritanism. And art was not considered work. You know, in 1915, the work ethics was absolutely dominant in this little town. To do art wasn't work. You know, just work was just work.
Art was too pleasurable to be work?
Well, no, it was outside the bounds of the Puritan ethic, really.
So what did you have to do to get closer to art? Did you,
well,
did it,
I tell you, if
I
could have met myself in that little town, that would have been a wonderful thing for me. It's true, I met a young man that was an architect, and that was something of a help. He used to say, sculpture and painting, the handmaidens of architecture. But that was all right because, in a sense, they were, because they were shown in buildings. But actually, I began drawing and painting at home. I'd do flowers and things. And I had a brother that played the saxophone. I used to draw him playing his saxophone. Then later, I went, when I was 21, I went to the Philadelphia School of Design for Women. You left out the for women. It was just a woman's school then. It still is. It's now more College of Art, but it's still just women, you know. Although the funny thing is, the dean is always a man. Of course, that's wrong, but that's the way it is. Although the dean at the Philadelphia School of Design for Women was a woman, Miss Harriet Sartain.
Were there different standards at the time for male and female art students?
I wouldn't have known it. I wouldn't have recognized it. And I don't recognize it now because I think art is art, you know.
Did you know any male students?
Well, you mean men artists? Yes, I finally married a man from Cuba that was an art student. But I met him at Chester Springs. That was the Academy summer school. And the Academy was just down the street from where I went. But I didn't want to be distracted by boys, so I went to this school.
When you were at that school for women, was there an idea of what was suitable subject matter for a woman to paint? Were you taught that there were certain subjects that were suitable for a woman to paint and certain subjects that were unsuitable?
Oh, no. It wasn't way back in the dark ages. No. No, you started out by drawing plaster casts. And the funny thing is that now, today, that education, which I always believed in, because I think drawing is sort of the discipline of art. You know, Picasso, he may take everybody apart into separate pieces and put them together as he likes. But actually, if he wanted to, he could make a perfect academic drawing. He knows how to draw. So you were put drawing plaster casts. And when you got good enough at that, then they put you in the life class. Now, the life class had nude male models. You see, back in the dark ages here, when Aikens taught at the Academy, he was fired from there for having a woman's class drawing a male model, even though the male model had a jock strap on. But that was worse than by the time I went, which was about 20 or 25 years later.
Alice Neal is my guest if you're just joining us, and I want to mention that she'll also be lecturing this evening at the Philadelphia College of Art on Broad and Spruce Streets, and this is free and open to the public at 7 o'clock at the Philadelphia College of Art.
Yes, you know what it is? It's my life in pictorial form, but it's not literal, you know. It's just, tell them to come.
I think I just did.
All right, that's fine.
When you got out of school, you still might not have had any models of professional women painters. How did you go about figuring out how to make a career for yourself?
What?
How did you figure out how to make a career for yourself in art?
Well, I didn't have any specific role model, but there were a lot of girls in that school, some of whom painted very well. But I hate to tell you that the ones that painted the best were the dumbest and everything else. Now, you see, I was always very good at mathematics. I was smart in school. You know, I could spell. These girls couldn't spell or anything, but they were the best painters. So I did my best to forget any learning I had and to make myself more stupid so I'd be a better painter.
When did you give up on that idea?
Huh?
When did you abandon that idea?
Oh, well, I realized afterwards that was superficial. But it just happened that these girls that had a lot of talent didn't have much book learning, you know. And to me, it was much more important to paint than to have book learning.
You were telling me before that you think of yourself as being an old-fashioned artist in your choice of subject matter.
I am. I tell you what, I paint street scenes. I paint people. I hate to use the word portrait because for so many years, the portrait was so despised, you know. In fact, it still is. Abstract expressionism is still more acceptable, and a new kind of crazy expressionism is more acceptable than anything that resembles anyone, you know.
Why do you think that is?
Well, the world is in a troublesome period, you know. There's wars everywhere. You know, Jehovah's Witnesses think it's going to come to an end because there's, I forget where they predict the end of the world, wars and rumors of wars and everything else. But actually, I saw a film recently on television with Kenneth Clark, and he went back to the 1500s, and it was at the at Urbino in Italy, and their theory was mine. They said, man is a measure of all things. That's what I've always thought. They even made the architectural design different from the Middle Ages, because the Middle Ages aspired to salvation and God, and they had it made human size in Urbino, and they'd paint actual fairly realistic pictures of their families and everything else. And in fact, one man said, you can do anything you will to do. He didn't just mean art. He meant anything in the world. And I love that too, because that means that if you're sufficiently tenacious and interested, you can accomplish what you want to accomplish in this world.
So you had started painting subject matter that was traditional for artists, but you did it in your own way. How did you develop that personal style?
Well, I hate conventional things. I hate even the new realism. That's out of fashion now, but about 10 years ago, when I would give a slide lecture, I would have to apologize for being psychological because that was considered a weakness. For instance, the new realists, they would take a room, a table, a chair and a person, and they were all just the same, and they would paint them all just the same. Now, I'll admit that compositionally they're the same, but actually they're different. Human beings are different from furniture. You know, furniture doesn't have blood, it doesn't have expression. And I think that the value of psychology is shown today because the world we live in is almost purely psychological.
Well, when you're painting somebody's portrait, when you're painting somebody's portrait, how much do you like to know about them?
Well, I tell you, if I know it, it's all right. But if I don't know it, it's all right too. I have done people that I just saw that day. If I haven't known them, I sit and talk to them about a half hour. And in that half hour, three or four times they'll take their most customary pose, whichever is natural to them, which means something about them, too. I try to paint the specific person, but not in limited realistic terms, with a touch of expressionism. And then I also try to paint the zeitgeist, the period when it's painted. You see, in the 60s, it was very different from the 70s. The 60s was a student revolt, you know.
How does that zeitgeist come in? Like when you look back at your portraits from the 30s, what are some of the things you see in those portraits?
Well,
that
you know what they were, the 30s. You know, you see, I was in that film, Pull My Daisy, that they made in 59-60. That was the Beat Generation with Allen Ginsberg and Gregory Corso and those people. But back in the 30s, there was that same Beat Generation. If you come to the slide lecture, you'll see Joe Gould and Sam Putnam, and they were just like the Beat, only they were 30 years earlier.
I think it's your portrait of Joe Gould, which has him with it's a nude, and there's...
Oh, those penises.
Yeah, and there's several penises coming out of his chest.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you see, I had a show in Russia in the 1980, in the summer, July 1980, and I deliberately tore the picture of Joe Gould out of a catalog I have when I had a big show in Athens, Georgia, because I thought it might shock the Russians that a lady in the 30s would paint a male nude and give him extra penises even. Come tonight and you'll see it. And then but one of the Russians even made a smart remark. I used to call this portrait Variations on an Old Theme or the Source of Russian Architecture, because his penis looks like St. Basil's upside down, you know. So one of the Russians, I took a film and gave it to them, a film about me, called Alice Neal, Collector of Souls. It was on remember those ones on Channel 13 about women? Well, that was one of those.
So what was the inspiration behind giving him all the extra penises in the portrait?
Well, you see, I was only 33 when I painted that, and I was more daring. And also, I thought he was an exhibitionist. I don't believe he had any love life, but I felt, I was sort of Freudian, I felt that all exhibitionism really comes from sex in a way. So I had all these extra penises. But when one of the Russians said it looks like St. Basil's, I was amazed because the Russians, well, they were intelligent, but they weren't quick on the pickup like that, but they did pick that up.
What other reactions did you get to that painting?
To what?
To that painting. What other reactions did you get?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to. What reactions would you get?
Were people shocked by it in America?
Well, I think it was fairly shocking in 1933. In fact, a man from the Whitney that was then on 8th Street came to see me, and he said, "Well, you have a matriarchy here." But I didn't mind that. That was all right.
Has it ever been hard for men to get comfortable in the nude when posing for you?
Well, Joe Gould loved it. In fact, he wanted to wave out the window, and it was an Italian neighborhood. I would have been drawn and quartered, you know, so I wouldn't let him. But actually, I have one of John Perrault nude also, and the man who had once been the head of the Whitney was very funny about that. He got very embarrassed, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a woman had painted it.
You had a portrait of, was it a self-portrait in 1931 of you nude?
No, that's 1980.
No, but there's a portrait of you from 1931.
Oh, but that's a photograph. It's not
a photograph.
So you mean in that catalog?
Yeah.
Yes, someone, I don't know who took it even, but it's very beautiful. I had just gotten over a nervous breakdown, so my face looks very sad. And the funny thing is, some art historian out in, Ellen Johnson, she's a famous art historian, she said, "Were you into Zen?" What she didn't know was there was no Zen in 1931.
Did your family and old friends from Colwyn know about the work that you were doing in the 30s?
Oh, you can't worry about those things. I mean, if you're going to go ahead, you know, you just have to go. You can't worry if people have foibles that hold them back. Yeah, there's always people that are held back by everything. They think nudes are shocking. In Georgia, for instance, I don't think, oh, he did show Joe Gould, but I don't think he showed it. Oh, yes, he did show male nudes, but he didn't show any female nudes. And I have some wonderful female pregnant nudes. He didn't show any of them. He also didn't show any black people. But that was in Georgia, you know. So I didn't quarrel with it because it was a great show and I have a great catalog of that.
Did your family want to sever a relationship with
you?
Oh,
no. I mean, they weren't bigoted. But they didn't exactly know what I was into either, because by that time I was living in New York, you know.
During the part of the 30s, you were an artist with the WPA, and they...
Well, early 30s. I tell you, first, though, let me go in chronological order. The school, I went to the Academy Summer School in Chester Springs, and there I met a handsome Cuban who was also studying art. I met him in 24, and we got married in 25. Then I went to Cuba, and I lived there for a year, and I painted all the time there. Then I came back to Philadelphia, and then we went to New York. Then I lived in New York for several years. And after that, I got on the WPA. About 1933, I got onto the WPA. And I was on for 10 years. I was on the easel project, which meant that I had 6 weeks to paint a picture. And my salary was $26.88 a week. But that was the equal of about $150 or $200 now, because then I had an apartment for $25 a month, and you can't get that now, you know.
Did that WPA affiliation affect the subject matter that you chose to paint?
Not really, except that that era, right now I have 9 revolutionary pictures of the 30s in Bonn, Germany. It'll open on the 13th of March. They're having a big show of revolutionary paintings in this country in the 30s. And I have a number of labor leaders. I also have the You Need a Biscuit Strike. And I have a large one of a torchlight parade in 1935 saying Nazis murdered Jews. And if the world had listened, these were left-wing marches. If the world had listened, Hitler didn't begin putting people into ovens until about 41. Thousands of lives would have been saved, but the world didn't listen.
What did you do after the WPA project folded?
Well, that's jumping too many years. That's 10 years. I don't want to go quite that fast. I just kept on painting, that's all. That's what I always did.
But how did you find a way to support yourself since...
Oh, well, everybody has that problem. I mean, every artist has that problem. First, you have to be able to live, and then you have to paint. But you do that any way you can. You give classes, and somehow, and then also I had acquired the idea that for art's sake, you had to give up everything. You know, if I had some money, I wouldn't buy a dress or anything. I'd buy canvas and paint materials.
Do you think that it was harder for you to get, well... How did it affect your career being a woman?
What?
How did it affect your career being a woman painter?
Well, I tell you what. It is harder. It was harder being a woman because they give men more opportunity. But just the same, I never thought when I'm in a room painting, I don't care if I'm a woman or a frog or what I am. I don't think there's a specific way women paint. I would meet men, they'd say to me, oh, you probably paint flowers. I do paint flowers, but I paint everything, you know. And I didn't feel, now, Simone de Beauvoir, in her novel, Second Sex, she says, I never felt I inherited the world because it was male-dominated. Well, then what did she inherit? You inherit the world. Somehow you find a place for yourself. And women, even though they didn't run everything, they were still there. They influenced things. And if I was attracted, for instance, one of the painters I liked very much was Goya. I never worried about him having been a man and me being a woman. I felt that it was all art, you know.
What about being a mother of 2 sons? Did that make it hard for you to find time to paint?
Well, it's difficult when children are little. You have the problem of taking care of them. That's one thing they should fight for in the world today, women. They should fight for daycare facilities. You see, I'm not saying Russia is better than this country, but at least they have facilities where if a woman wants a career, any kind of a career, she has a perfectly equipped nursery. In fact, that's one of the places where they do the job very well, taking care of the children, you know.
Probably most of your, or many of your male friends probably had wives at home who helped them with their careers.
Listen, do you know what I used to say before I realized that it wasn't a thing to say? I used to say, I needed a wife because, for one thing, a husband, somehow he sometimes doesn't want you to star, you know. And I never cared about starring, but you just put a lot of importance into painting, you know. But actually, daycare centers would answer those problems.
Did you have problems with your husband not wanting you to be the star of the family?
Well, not directly, no. But I think there was, in fact, I think there's less competition between husbands and wives now than there was then. It's a privilege, you know, to paint. And it takes up a lot of time, and it means there's a lot of things you don't do. But still, with me, painting was more than a profession. It was also an obsession. I had to paint, you know.
You painted several portraits of your sons as
they grew up. Oh, I have, yes.
When would you know that it was time to do another portrait?
Well, you see, I didn't think in those terms. I did them when they were small, and then I did them when they were teenagers, and then I did them when they were grown up. In fact, I have two sons. One's a lawyer and one's a doctor. And the doctor, the last picture I made of him was 78. He's already lost a lot of his hair. And he's only 41. He shouldn't have lost it so young, you know. And the other chap is 43. And I did one of him when he was going to Columbia that's very good. And then I did one of him when he was working for Pan Am. And that was in the 70s. And the truth is, I didn't know what the 70s was about until I painted him. And then I realized that it was the time when the corporations enslaved all these bright young men, you know, because he looks just about ready to die of being enslaved by Pan Am. He's not working for them now, thank God.
How did that communicate in the portrait?
Well, now that portrait, if you go to the slide lecture, you'll see it. He just looks used up, you know. He'd go to work early in the morning, and by the time he got home at night, he wouldn't have any energy left for anything.
Was it surprising for you, a kind of bohemian mother, to have
yes,
a son?
Yes, it was. It was, sure. But I think they looked at me working so hard and not getting too much financial gain for it, and thought that it wasn't such a wonderful profession. Anyway, they wanted to be professionals, and since they were bright and went to college and worked at it, they became that.
Alice Neal is my guest, and she will be giving a slide lecture this evening at the Philadelphia College of Art on Broad and Spruce Streets. That's at 7 o'clock, and that is open to the public. You know, I think your mother tends to see you differently than anybody else in the world does.
Yes.
Do you think that your sons were surprised at how you painted them, since they might see themselves very differently?
Well, they weren't all that conventional. You know, to be conventional is also to be limited in a way, I think. And also, my pictures, I think you would always know who they are, even though I'm not just a straight realist. You would recognize the person, because it's very important for me to get the psychology of the person.
But I think sometimes what a mother thinks is characteristic
no,
of her
I'm
son
not
is
sentimental.
Is, uh-huh.
One of the good things I have, I'm capable of objectivity. You see, to be sentimental to me is a weakness. Not that I don't have emotions, I'm emotional, but I'm not, I think to be sentimental is to be a bit of a sap.
So you're not sentimental when you look back at old paintings either?
If you're not sentimental, you just aren't sentimental. You have another point of view.
What were the 50s like for you?
Now, let me think. You see, it's easy for me to know how old I was because I'm always in tune with the year. I was born 28 days after the century. You see, 1900 is a century, and I was born January 28th, 1900. The 50s, well, that's supposed, in woman's lib, that's supposed to be the era where all the men took their wives out to the suburbs and the women conformed more. In the 50s, I lived in Spanish Harlem, and I just worked as I always had worked. I taught some private classes. And my main thing always was to paint pictures, like it always was. Now, I don't think my sons ever thought that I'd really make as much of a success of it as I did, because in 74 I had a one-person show at the Whitney. I had the whole second floor. I had 60 paintings, you know. But they insisted that they all be figure paintings. They didn't. I had paintings that I was dying to put in there because they needed big space, you know, landscapes and still lifes and things. But the man that put it on, what was his name? Bauer, Jack Bauer. He wanted to give me credit for having preserved figures for 5 decades. So I covered 5 decades in 74. And it was a very interesting show, you know.
Did that show change your life from the recognition?
Well, I tell you, no one thing changes your life, but everything added together. I tell you what that show did for me. I always felt, in a sense, that I didn't have the right to paint because I had 2 sons and I had so many things that I should be doing. Here I was painting. But that show convinced me that I had a perfect right to paint. I shouldn't have ever felt that, but I did feel it. And after that show, I never felt that anymore.
Do you think that gets back to the Puritan background that you're talking about?
It might. It probably might, because there isn't anything in your life that doesn't influence you, you know.
Many women really look to you as the role model, the role model that you never had.
Listen, I get so many letters every day and so many people come to see me. Of course, there's so many artists in New York now, they have a hard time finding galleries.
What effect did the women's movement have on you? And as I say,
well,
you became a role model.
Well, I always, inside myself, I was always woman's lib. I never thought that I was any way inferior to men, although I never broke the rules. For instance, my sons, I never made them always do the dishes or anything like that. I didn't do the ordinary things of woman's lib. Still, I always felt perfectly equal to any men or to my sons or anything else. And I never felt that would hold me back in art at all, you know.
Have you been active with women in the women's art movement?
Oh, well, they think I'm a great leader of them. But you know what? Some of the women, when they do get into places of power, they disappoint me because they don't add anything by being women. They don't act, they act just like the men, just want to get ahead and do the same things. But just now I read an article about, who is that big one out in Queens, you know, that wrote the book about Woman's Lib?
Who do you mean?
She's homely.
Is she a painter or
no,
Betty Friedan?
No, she's a writer.
Huh? Do you mean Betty Friedan?
Who? Betty Friedan, yes, she had an article in the Times.
Right.
She's modified her position a lot. You see, if you followed what they said before, there couldn't be families anymore. Men live, you know, they have to live. They have a right on the earth just like women. So I thought that women went much too far. I even thought some women almost killed their husbands because there was no place left for a man. That's absurd. You have to have, of course, EPA should be passed. It's frightful that women don't have equal rights before the law, you know. Do you know that I think we got the vote in 1921, the year before women's suffrage demonstrated in Washington. And you know that the men spat in their faces and burnt their bare arms with cigars? But there are many men that are in favor of equality. I think the relation between the sexes is much better. But women went through this period where they were all important and the man hardly existed, you know, and that's wrong.
I noticed when you came into the station, you were looking at everybody very, very closely. You seem to really be looking into our eyes and looking at our faces and trying to figure out who each of the people who you passed were. Do you do that a lot when you meet people?
Look, whether I'm painting or not, I have this overweening interest in humanity, you know. But not just that, other things too, you know. Out the window, street scenes in New York, landscapes, all kinds of things. But just the same, even if I'm not working, I'm still analyzing people. It's built in, sort of, you know.
You know that expression, you can't judge a book by its cover. Can you tell what someone's like or tell
something
about their character?
Well, now, you see, I wouldn't be able to say who would murder somebody. I realize that. It's not for practical purposes. It's just that I have a sort of a talent for seeing what it is that makes people run. You know, different people.
Say you're painting someone who has real obvious flaws, not necessarily either to their character or physical flaws. Will you put that in? Because they might feel really self-conscious seeing it there on the canvas.
Well, I tell you, you'll see the slide lecture tonight. For instance, I painted a woman. She's a well-known woman, but I'm not going to say her name. She has a withered arm. One of her arms is withered. Meanwhile, she is so sane and so effective that when I painted her, I never highlighted that withered arm, although I might have liked to, because I like any sort of a distortion. But I didn't highlight it because I didn't think it really participated in her real life. She could hardly put a coat on. She can't drive a car. Yet the withered arm is not a psychological factor in her life, whereas somebody else might be overcome by that. She isn't.
You painted a self-portrait of yourself nude at the age of 80.
80, yes. For that, Mayor Koch in New York loves me.
Why did you want to do that nude self-portrait?
Why did I do it? Well, now, I'll tell you its whole history. I had a show at the University of Georgia Art Gallery in 1975. I had 83 pictures there, a wonderful show. The reason the man who ran it, whose name was Bill Paul, the reason he gave me that show was that he resented the Whitney leaving out my still lives and street scenes and everything, and he put them all in, you know. Now I forget what I was going to tell you.
This is about how you did the self-portrait.
Oh, he wanted me to do a self-portrait. The whole catalog is in black and white. I have some with me, but they're very good catalogs. He goes over my whole life, you know, and there's a lot of reproductions. But he said, if you'll do a self-portrait, I'll put it in color. So I thought I'll try to do one. So I don't know if I was making fun of myself or what I was doing. I couldn't tell you. But I did a self-portrait. I began it. Then I had nothing on. It was hot summer weather. And I looked out the window once. At first, I put a bathrobe on after I'd paint, but then I didn't bother. It was so hot. I looked out the window, and I'm still, even though I'm not in Spanish Harlem, there's still a lot of Spanish where I live, 107th and Broadway. And I saw a middle-aged Spanish man looking up and grinning. So I thought, my God, he can see in the window, you know. So then I didn't work on it anymore. It never got into that show. But then several years later, a chap named Hal Reed gave a show at his gallery, and it was self-portraits. So I got it out. I was always going to scrape it, but my sons both thought it was a great composition. So I got it out, and I worked on it for a whole week. And it came to be what it is now, and I sent it to that show there. Well, the night that show opened, it came out the next day in Newsweek, even the New York Times. Everybody was amazed at this portrait, you know.
Well, I think there's almost a taboo in our society against showing older people naked.
Well, of course, I broke all the rules. Yes, sure. Well, I did, and since it was myself, I could do as I pleased, you know. So I have the flesh falling off the bones a bit. I was a little fatter then than I am now. But anyway, a lot of people liked it. It was just in a big show of portraits at the Frumkin Gallery. And I was on Channel 4, The Time of Your Life, saying how at 80 I was still painting all the time and that it was very important. And I did this self-portrait. And then it was shown in Germany. I had all kinds of letters from Germany. I got so much notoriety with that portrait, but I didn't do it for that.
You know when you were painting it and the man was looking up and you could tell he saw you in the window?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just put on a curtain?
What?
Why didn't you just put down a shade?
Of course you have to have light when you paint.
So you couldn't have done that?
I couldn't have done that. No, and another thing, I had gotten tired of it. I didn't want it to be in that show, so I just put it away. In fact, I almost scraped it a number of times. I'm glad I didn't, because when I painted it, it was all drawn, and I was able to finish it in a week, you know, so it could get in this big portrait show.
Have you ever had any interest in retiring?
Any what?
Interest in retiring. Would you ever want to stop painting?
In retiring? No, what would you do then? No, even now I have cataracts, and it's much harder for me to paint, but I still paint. I just painted a wonderful picture, really, of young love of my granddaughter, who's 16, and her boyfriend, Joe, who is 18, and it's a wonderful picture. I wouldn't know, looking at that picture, that the person couldn't see well. But I don't see very well. I have to get up close. But I have a very well-trained memory, so I can get close and then remember and then paint.
I really want to thank you very much for
is
talking
it over?
With us. Yeah, the time has really flown.
Well, tell them all to come to the slide lecture.
I'll give all that
information. Because it's in color, yeah.
Allison, you'll be talking tonight, and that's at the Philadelphia College of Art, and it's free and open to the public. The Philadelphia College of Art is at Broad and Spruce Streets. And for more information, if you'd like it, you can call 893-3156. That's 893-3156. And she'll be showing slides of her work, but if you'd like to see canvases,
I'll show 160.
Goodness. It almost be like a movie.
Yes, it is. Sure, it takes about an hour and a half.
Okay, so that's tonight at 7 at the Philadelphia
College
of Art.
I gave it at Harvard, you know, and the president of Harvard wrote me a letter with a gold star saying I was the best lecturer that was ever there.
Great. And some of her paintings are also on exhibit at a group show now at the Philadelphia
College
of Art.
Yeah, I have three there.
Including the nude at age 80 that we were just discussing. So Alice Neal, if you joined in a little bit late, is a painter, and she paints street scenes, landscapes, still lifes, and portraits. And that's the work that we've been discussing. She was born in Pennsylvania in 1900. It's 18 minutes to 4 o'clock. This is WHYY 91 FM. In a few minutes, we'll be hearing an interview with poet Sonia Sanchez. This is Kenny Barron in a solo piano recording.